Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, you know what day it is. It's Tuesday, and that means it's time for Tuesday Taoism. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to explore the mind and the depths of consciousness that create it. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your reality and your life through mastery of the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. And I'd like to also say, as I do every episode, if you like the content of this podcast, you find it helpful, I hope that you will consider sharing it with others. Now, we have a couple series here on the podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism, like today. We have our Zen stream on Sunday. And then I do try to throw in an extra episode, usually once a week if I'm able. And it's usually on a topic related to mental health. That is my professional background. I've been a psychotherapist now for about 16 years. So you'll hear about things like mindfulness, mental health, mental illness, relationships, communication, goal setting, basically anything and everything that helps you reach your goals, achieve your dreams, just live an overall happier day-to-day life. So as I said, today being Tuesday, we are doing Tuesday Taoism, and Tuesday Taoism, or Taoism I should say, is based on a text called the Tao Te Ching, written 2,500 years ago, give or take a few hundred years, in ancient China. And it's a book that I discovered as a teenager. It's just chocked full of amazing wisdom that has just helped me throughout the years consistently. I've read several translations of this book, and I've read it on and off ever since. So it's been, gosh, probably about 25 years now if I do the math, which I haven't done for a while. But yeah, it's always been somewhere in the back of my mind. Sometimes it comes to the forefront. And whenever it does, it just always has amazing things to share. And I said, you know, this is just an ideal kind of book to share with you all here on the podcast. It consists of 81 very short chapters. So every Tuesday I read one, or pretty much every Tuesday, I read one and then talk about it a little bit, and hopefully we get something really good out of it for our practice. Now, I do like to say this every week. Translations vary a great deal. This book has been translated hundreds, if not thousands, of times. And even if you read two translations in English, they're both could be in English. If they're different authors, you may find very different interpretations of the original scripture. So it's kind of interesting fact about this book. You can go to I don't know how many bookstores are around you anymore, but if you pick up two copies of the Tao Te Ching by two different authors, even though they're both written in English, you'll find that they are very different. This book I'm reading from has always been my favorite, one by Stephen Mitchell. So that's the one that I'm reading from, just so you know, in case you're looking for a copy. Today we are up to chapter 71, and as usual, just before I started recording this, I read it very briefly, and you know, it's funny, this is such a coincidence. If you believe in coincidence, you don't believe in coincidence, either way you look at it, it's just interesting that this last Sunday when I did the Zen stream, I had shared with you, I had just come off a pretty short one-day retreat, Zen retreat, and we were basically meditating for somewhere between 5 and 7 hours on Saturday. So Sunday, for the Zen stream, I shared about some stuff that came up for me during those hours of meditation, and it ties so well to Chapter 71 of the Tao Te Ching today. It is actually pretty amazing, and I may find myself, to be honest, repeating some of the things that I talked about in the Zen stream, just because they overlap so much. Let me go ahead and read this, and for those of you who listen to the Zen stream, I think you'll notice right away what I'm talking about. So this is Chapter 71, Tao Te Ching, translated by Stephen Mitchell. Not knowing is true knowledge. Presuming to know is a disease. First, realize that you are sick. Then you can move toward health. The master is her own physician. She has healed herself of all knowing. Thus, she is truly whole. That's it. That's the end of the chapter. Very short one. We've had some short ones lately, and just glancing ahead, the next few are pretty short as well. Like I said right before I read it, I had just spoken about this kind of thing on Sunday, and we have to talk here for a quick minute, get very clear about when he says knowing, not knowing versus presuming to know. What are we talking about here? Because you could interpret this several ways. We could talk about conventional knowledge, of course, like you, like I said on Sunday, you go to college, you take a few courses, you know, there's knowledge that you're adding to your mind, and that's good stuff. You know, you can get value out of that, and that's something that serves us in a practical way to perhaps, you know, get some kind of certification, get some kind of degree, you know, move towards a goal of, you know, I want to be this sort of professional, or I want to achieve this kind of, you know, job, whatever. That's practical aspect of things, and there's a place for that, okay? Now, when we talk about another type of knowledge, however, or of knowing, and this is something I encourage you actually to just listen to the Zen stream that I recently recorded, because it goes into a lot more depth on this, and I don't want to repeat everything that I said, but there is also a type of, like he says here, presuming to know is a disease. And a lot of times, especially in my work in mental health, you run across this a lot, is a lot of times when you're talking to someone or someone's talking to you, you may find yourself, I've been there, you're in the habit of like hearing something perhaps that you heard somebody else tell you in the past, and it's very easy, I should say, to quickly say, oh, I know that already, I know. And really when we stop to look at that, what I have noticed, especially in therapeutic setting, is though that's code for I'm not really listening to you. That's really what it's code for. It's like, I know that already. You don't have to tell me that. At that point, there is a mental position that changes. You could also even say a change in mood or receptiveness or an energetic level where you're not really open to receiving information. Even if it's information that you are assuming to already have, the truth is that every individual is different, and when you hear it, if you're open, fully open, even hearing it from someone else, you can gain new insight, new knowledge, or at least you can use that instance to get to know the person better. So I have said, as I said this past Sunday, that the two words "I know" can often be rather poisonous in a relationship and in our own development. So that's the kind of knowledge that I believe he's referring to in this particular chapter. He's not talking about the kind of knowledge that I started out describing, where you go somewhere, you take a class, you know, you learn something, and that's practical knowledge for your day-to-day affairs, for a profession, for a job. But what we're talking about here is more of a mental attitude, a mental position, is that idea of knowing has several implications. One, I already mentioned, which is not really being open to what someone is telling you. Okay, that would be one way. Another, a little more subtle way is that a lot of times, and I've definitely had this experience, maybe you've had it as well, you have some kind of insight, right? Like, let's say you read a great book. Like when I read The Power of Now, I was like, wow, this is it. This is what I've been looking for. And it was like, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago or something. And I was literally almost on a high reading that book. I felt so elated and I felt so excited about this amazing information that was coming across in this book. It's similar to, you know, the first time I read the Tao Te Ching, the first time. So you have this quote unquote, you know, profound experience. But what I found, at least again speaking for myself, is that that knowledge in and of itself, at some point, it's not enough, right? There, that hunger for something new, some new piece of information, some new interpretation, some new teacher to come along, some new book, that is, because for whatever reason, the knowledge has an effect for a little while, but then after you've read it enough times and it's kind of turned from an experience into just a memory of something that's of new knowledge that you acquired, right? It doesn't really have that same punch anymore. And then we often turn to the next thing. Oh, now I need another book. I need another teacher. I don't know what happened. I had something, but somehow I lost it. I don't know what happened. I felt so great. And then this happened. Maybe something happened in your life that kind of snapped you out of that high. And you realize, oh, I thought I had it, but I don't know what happened. Somehow this manifested in my life, and now this is horrible. I must have done something wrong. I need to find something new now to read. And so we have this tendency to find some kind of teaching, perhaps, and we grip onto it very tightly, again, perhaps, and then we rely on it to kind of keep us feeling good forever. And that doesn't work. It doesn't work. At least in my experience, it doesn't really work. And one of the things I had talked about on Sunday is how the mind, as I describe it, is never really holding still, right? So if you had a mind that was holding still, that just never moved, meaning that thoughts didn't constantly come in and out, feelings didn't constantly appear, experiences didn't constantly change, memories didn't constantly get added, projections into the future didn't constantly get added, if you just had a mind that didn't do anything, just kind of held still, then you can kind of call that a permanent knowing. It's like a fixed non-movement of the mind. It's like, okay, now I got it. Now I have gripped this. I have sunk my claws into it. And my mind is now forever in this perfect state. And I no longer have to, you know, it's not going to move anymore, right? But that just isn't reality. The next instant, the next breath you take, new thoughts enter, and granted, there are some very powerful meditation practices that can slow the mind and possibly keep it still for a little while, but invariably, as you move on to your next activity, you have conversations with people, you go to work, you do your practical day-to-day things, the mind starts moving again. And so when he, in this little chapter, refers to not knowing, I believe the impression I get is he's talking about this ability to stop trying to control the movement of the mind. And like I had mentioned in the Zen stream on Sunday, is that this can often present or manifest as a lot of overly control, trying to overly control your thoughts, trying to overly control how you feel. If you have a negative thought, you may think, oh, I don't want to think that. And then you start obsessing about why you're thinking like that. And you try to combat it with other thoughts. And then you get into this internal conflict. And this, of course, can lead to a lot of anxiety, can lead to depression. And so one of the tenets that I find repeating itself in Taoism, and to some extent also, good extent actually, in Zen, at least some Zen teachers I've heard, Zen masters that I've worked with, is that don't hold on to anything. Don't grip anything. Just, again, like I had said on Sunday, see the mind as a stream or a river. It's always moving. You're not going to jump into the river and try to grab the water and try to make it stop moving. Say, oh, I really love this water. I want this water to stay here. I don't want this water to go away. No, it's flowing. That's the nature of mind. And so not knowing, as he's talking about in this chapter, and as I talked about on the Zen stream, is basically a profound acceptance that this is mind. Mind is always a river. It's always a stream. It's always moving. It's always going. And our job basically is to watch it, right? Just be aware of it. And that awareness is when I talk about mind versus consciousness, consciousness is that awareness. It's the space within which that river can flow. And so we, in our practice, try to align ourselves more with that vast consciousness, as opposed to trying to jump into the mind stream to try to control what is happening, what is flowing, right? And that, in a general sense, is the difference between trying to approach living or our experience of our internal experience of going through this life. There's a difference between trying to address it through jumping into the river and trying to control everything that's going through that mind, as opposed to being the awareness that is surrounding that river. And but you know, I think the real key here of a very good ability to develop is to actually be able to shift between the two. So that, like I said, there's a time and place for everything. So there are times, for example, I've talked a lot about here and on the YouTube channel, doing affirmations, right? Doing affirmations is a kind of work that's more addressing the river. So you are repeating statements, you are repeating thoughts, you are trying to remain positive, keep a positive outlook. There's nothing wrong with that. There's plenty of studies that have been done on the power of positive thinking and being optimistic, and all that's good stuff. Okay, we want to keep doing that, but we don't want to do it to an extreme where we have no allowance for other types of thoughts that may pop in there, because we all have them. We have thoughts that at times that are not so positive. We're not perfect, right? We have feelings that come up in us that are not always happy-go-lucky and joyous, right? We can do our best to keep them as positive as we can, but there comes a time where we also need to let go and have the ability to just sit in the awareness and allow whatever needs to come out to come out. And that's a delicate balance, learning how to do that, recognizing when is the time to go in and possibly try to talk yourself out of thinking or feeling something negative, as opposed to taking the other approach, which is just allowing those feelings and those thoughts to just be there and just observing them, witnessing them. There's no right way, there's no wrong way. In fact, sticking only to one or the other, I would say, is the only thing that I would advise against. Our practice is about having the innate wisdom to know when to do which one. And when he talks about in this little chapter of presuming to know, I believe that this is the way that I would interpret it to apply to my moment-to-moment practice, is being able to be open, allow the stream, and at the same time be able to, again, several instances, be able to go in and also be part of that stream, have the ability to do that. So very, very, very short chapter, yet chocked full of really good stuff as usual. And so I'll just read it one more time and then I'll let you go. He also says here, I could go on about this too, that line that he says, first realize that you are sick. And that is an interesting line. I'd love to know how directly that was interpreted from the original text, because I think a lot of people rely a great deal on their knowledge, and they believe to a certain extent that the knowledge of something that they have is going to somehow protect them or save them from something, some sort of salvation. And it's interesting how at times, not everyone, but at times, some people will hold on so strongly to this that it almost becomes like a death grip, right? It's like no other information can get in that may actually help the person in some way. And then, of course, you run into things like denial and you know, belief systems or belief structures that are very, very, rigid and unable to... They're not malleable. You can't really work with them. So you do see this as well, especially, like I said, in my work, being a psychotherapist. But that's kind of neither here nor there. So let me just read it one more time and I'll let you go. It says here, not knowing is true knowledge. Presuming to know is a disease. First, you realize that you are sick. Then you can move toward health. The master is her own physician. She has healed herself of all knowing. Thus, she is truly whole. Interesting word there, whole, given the little metaphor that I was just talking about, mind versus consciousness. I believe that the ability to shift between the two is a more whole way of living. So I'll let you go with that. I hope you got something useful out of this this little chapter and this podcast episode. Stay tuned. I'll be back later this week with another episode. And have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day.